When Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of King Herod, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star at its rising and have come to do him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled, and all of Jerusalem with him. Assembling all the chief priests and scribes and people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it has been written through the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judea, since from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod called the Magi secretly, and ascertained from them the time of the star's appearance. He said to Bethlehem, and said, "Go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word, that I too may go and do him homage." After their audience with the king, they set out, and behold, the star that they had been seen at a rising preceding them, until it came and stopped at the place where the child was. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves and did him homage. Then they opened their treasures and offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for the country by another way. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
ADT, the alarm company, has a new advertising campaign. Home, they say, isn't just a place, it's a feeling. So, buy our alarm system so you feel secure even when you're not in your house. They're onto something. I know that as a kid, I was fortunate, but I didn't realize at the time. We never moved. I was a baby, so my parents were well settled by the time I came along. And my dad's still in the same house they've been in since we were 7. But I remember as a kid always being kind of jealous when one of my buddies' family would move to a new house. So it was exciting. It was a new place, a new space, new nooks and crannies for hide and seek. I realized as an adult how profoundly stupid that is. I had to move the week before Christmas into the rectory. Not a great time to move. And moving is a pain. You have to box everything up, you have to make sure it's safe, and more than anything, you have to take a new space and make it your own. You have to take a new house and make it your home. Home is more than just a place. It is a feeling. And something more. And that's important to us because when the wise men finally came to the place over which the star appeared, they found the child and his mother in the house, in the home. God has a home, a house, and he lives. And works and plants just like you and me. He has a place and a space in which to feel comfortable, to pass the time, to count the changing of the seasons, the passing of the years. He had a place where his parents watched him grow up into the man they always dreamed he'd be, and something more. Just like all of you who have had little ones grow up, have watched them become the men and women you always hoped they'd be, and something more. God has a home now, and it's with you, his people. That's the reason that the church calls the feast Epiphany. It's not a commemoration of the wise men. They actually have their own separate feast days, like in the summer. No, it's not about them. See, it's kind of a turn or a play on words. It gets lost a little bit in English. But an epiphany is like a moment of inspiration. The root word, right? There's spirit. Epiphany is a manifestation, literally an unveiling. It's like that moment when the deacon takes the veil off the chalice and you suddenly see the beautiful gold beneath. It's not that you don't know what's under there. You've been asked a thousand times. You know what's under that sheet. But every time, the light catches it just a little bit differently. Every time, the priest elevates it just a little bit more, and it catches you differently. It's like that moment in the wedding when the groom takes the veil off his bride. It's not that he doesn't know what she looks like. If he does, he's got a different problem. But that day, she looks more beautiful than she's ever looked before. That's what happened here, that day, at the Holy House in Nazareth or Bethlehem or Egypt, wherever they were. The wise men came because they had an intuition. They knew something about this kid, but they didn't know it all. And so they came to offer gifts, and God revealed himself to them. They thought they were the ones on the trip. They thought they were the ones doing something for the child. The child did it for them. He revealed to them who he was by their gifts. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Sing the hymn. Gold for a king. Gold representing kingship and rule. Incense for a priest, for a god. Turns out he's not just the one whirling the incense, he's the one the incense is thrown at. And myrrh, not something I recommend for baby showers. We like showing up with embalming fluid. Which makes the gift all the more mysterious, right? What was the intuition that led the wise men to bring the myrrh? To recognize, even from the beginning, that this pointed to that. That the crib pointed to the cross. God used the gifts of the wise men to reveal the identity of the child to them. And he uses your gifts to reveal himself to you today. Home isn't just a feeling. Grace. It's a virtue. It's a grace because it's given. It can't be artificially produced, no matter how hard we try. But once that grace is given, it's got to be cultivated, like a plant in a garden. You've got to take care of it. You've got to practice it, like an instrument. Home practices a virtue we call hospitality. And we have someone in our midst today who has practiced hospitality to an exemplary degree. She's probably going to punch me after Mass. But Eileen Miller has been a parishioner forever and has been in charge of our lunch program here at Christ the King School for nigh on 30 years. She served over a million meals. And in 30 years, no child has ever been turned away from food at Christ the King Catholic School. That's what home looks like. And it's not just for Amy. She's just a sign to the rest of us that it really is possible. Even on the days we don't feel like it. Even on the days where it seems like pain, even when you crunch the numbers and it looks impossible, it can happen. We, right here, can change the world. And it can happen because this isn't simply sort of a Jesus-up way of being nice to people. Home, hospitality, as a virtue, as a habit of life, as a grace disposition given from God, it's something else. Because what it does is it provides space and time for the other person to know that they are loved, and to trust the one who loves them enough that when God reveals himself, they can see it. God is revealing himself to us every moment of every day. We talk so often about occasions of sin. Every time we make our confession, we say the act of contrition, we promise to avoid the near occasion of sin. Well, there's a parallel here that we usually skip, which is probably the reason we fall into sin so much, and that's the near occasion of grace. If the wise men had the eyes to see was the near occasion of grace, they went on this wild road trip not knowing what to expect, but they found God in the flesh. And that changed everything. Because if God has come in the flesh, just like yours and mine, if God's made a house, a home and a house, just like yours and mine, then that means your house and my house, your home and my home, are fit dwellings for God. It means that if we practice that virtue of hospitality, if we make everyone who crosses our threshold feel welcome, if we give them the time and the space to experience love and care and forgiveness, that they'll be able to see God. They'll encounter God in the flesh, in you, and in me. The Benedictines have a saying, usually inscribed to the door of the house, Hospis Venit, Christus Venit. When the guest comes, it is Christ who comes. And of course, we know from the story of Father Abraham that many have entertained angels unaware. I'm not only talking about random strangers that knock on your door, because I know that doesn't happen as much nowadays. I mean the people you bump into at ID. I mean the guy at the gas station that doesn't have enough change. I mean the lady in the queue next to you that you don't really like. That's what I'm talking about. Those are the guests that need to see the living face of Christ in and on you. But of course, for us to be open enough to do this, for us to be keen and aware, like Eileen has been in these long years, we've got to remind ourselves. We've got to be attentive. We've got to stay on top. So, the church gives us sacraments, little reminders throughout the year. There's one today that I'm assuring that's not been a custom here in a long time. The Blessed Trough. There's an article about it, a little write-up in the book, explains what to do. But basically, we bless the trough here at church, and then you take it home. And you mark the lintel above your door, just like the Jews did at Passover, with the year and the initials of the wise men. Balthazar, Caspar, Melchior. This is one of those terrific Catholic codes. It's the kind of thing the Dan Brown always wants to get to, but can't find, so you need something else up instead. Caspar, Balthazar, and Melchior are real names. They were real people. But they're also initials. Because when we write it above our doors, what we're writing is C, Christus, M, Mansionem, B, Benedictus, Christ bless this house. Christ dwell in this house. Because what it means is that in this house, the house that we mark, there is one guest who is always welcome. There is one resident always present. There is somebody always in this house to keep a light on for you and for everyone that you live with and everyone who comes and knocks at your door. There is one who is always there. And if you have the grace to invite him in, then you can't help but recognize him in everyone.